A little bit about the study that we're going to undertake. This is a study of the attributes and the character of God. And I want to talk for just a few minutes about why I think that's important, and then give you a brief outline of the way that I want to teach this material. I think it's important because that's God is really what we're all about. And, you know, it kind of goes without saying that you have to understand the character and nature of God. If you don't understand the character and nature of God, then there is no real reason to be a Christian. And I think that's what the Apostle Paul was hinting at in 1 Corinthians when he said, if in this life only we have hope in Christ, we're of all men most miserable. You have to understand God, who he is and what he is, if you're going to have a reason to be a Christian. So a little bit about the way that I would like to teach this. I put out the whole 13 weeks, primarily because Kim and I are going to be going on vacation a little bit later in the summer. We don't know exactly when yet. Some of that depends on how Mandy's surgery goes. And so I wanted the people that are subbing for me on Sunday nights to have an outline that they can follow so that it's pretty well developed in their own mind. I spend a lot of time looking at material that other people put together. And this was put together by a friend of mine. He is, at the time, he put this together back in 2007. And at the time, he was a second preacher at Emory Hills Church in Atlanta, Georgia. And so I think he's done a wonderful job, and I really can't improve on it. I think he's hit the nail on the head. So contacted him, and he said it'd be fine if we used his material. What I want you to do as you study this material is work through the material that is an introduction or a discussion of the topic for the evening. And then what we're going to do in class is not repeat that material. You know, when I was teaching in Eastern Washington, I taught a class, was a class in behavior modification, and one of my students after the first week came up and he said, "You didn't talk about the book." And I said, "No, I didn't. You have the book. You read the book. If all I did was regurgitate the book, then I'm a real overpaid reader. And so I'm not going to talk about that material. That's material that you have, that you will review. And when we come together in class, we will extend that material. If all we do is go back and just read the book together, then you're just overpaying for this class. You ought to buy the book and not come to class." So tonight, what we're going to do is expand on the material that is an introduction. And I realize that that's a little bit difficult because you didn't have this material way ahead. I was still struggling with what we were going to do, and so I apologize for that. But in the future, you will have this material before you, and you can spend some time reviewing this. And when we come together, it'll be more important to you. So let's begin tonight with the statement that Taser made. Taser said, oh my goodness, I need more light, or I washed this and it shrank. Can somebody read Taser's statement? Because it's written in italics and I can't see it.
Is that Tozer? Is that that first statement?
Tozer.
Yeah. So what comes into our minds when we think about God is the most important thing about us.
Okay. What do you think about his statement? Anybody agree? Or anybody disagree? Yeah, Carol.
Well, if you don't understand the greatness of God, if you don't think how great he is and that he knows everything and that he is eternal, then you limit God because of your knowledge. And it's much harder to believe and have faith that he can do something is because you don't understand how great God is.
Okay. Other thoughts? I'm just trying to turn up my hearing aids here. Anybody at home have thoughts about Tozer's statement? That's why Bill.
Bill, what? The most important thing about us confuses me because this is a study about God. Can you explain why I can't understand that?
In my mind, I had not divided between the members of the Godhead. I think in my mind, when I read Tozer's statement, Tozer's statement, I did not separate the Father, the Son, and the Spirit. I think you have to understand the Godhead. So that's why I think it's the most important thing. Yeah.
If you think about a 2-year-old who thinks, I turn the light on, I turn the light off, I turn the light on, and he's going, that's a miracle, that's wonderful. He's fooled, right? And then you show him that the light switch is doing it, and he thinks, I understand light. And then somebody becomes an electrician, and he understands light a whole lot more than I do. So your understanding of the subject shows how much depth you can get. But I also got to thinking after I said that other statement is, if you don't understand how consistent God is and how much God loves, then, and how his punishment is and why it's just, then you don't understand, well, how could God do that? And you just say, well, if God knows everything and he could do that, then I don't want to know that person. I don't know.
Okay. Okay. You know, Tolstoy wrote War and Peace, and some people say that if, I don't know if you've read it or not, but if you haven't, some people say that in War and Peace, he's trying to resolve a conflict between a God of wrath of the Old Testament and a God of love of the New Testament. And he was originally going to be a priest and decided that that wasn't going to work out for him. But sometimes people separate between God who appears in the old and God who appears in the new, and they don't put them together. It's as if God changed somewhere. Halfway through the history of humankind, God just became a different God. So Ted.
One of the things that I think I'm kind of in the same vein you are is when we think of Colossians chapter 2 and verses 8 and 9, when we think about Jesus and we think about him submitting to God and submitting to the Father. But then we read this statement like Colossians chapter 2 and verse 9 that says, for in him dwelleth the fullness of the Godhead bodily. It's really hard to wrap your mind around God. Jesus was submitting to him, but he is the ultimate example of God. And in him dwelt the Godhead bodily. So it makes it really difficult sometimes, and I'm sure new Christians especially might have a hard time wrapping their minds around who Jesus really was.
Good point. You ever tried to, if you've taught little guys, you know, 3 and 4 year olds, and you give them a piece of paper and said, what does God look like? What do they generally draw?
Santa Claus.
I'm sorry?
Santa Claus. Without the red suit.
A man.
It could be. They draw a man. Who do they generally draw?
Jesus. Their dad.
Somebody really actually studied this. You know who they generally draw? Either their mother or their grandmother.
Huh, really?
Yeah, because that's the person that they think is the closest to God. The second most frequent person is their grandfather. And fathers are way down on the list. But I think that speaks to how important it is to understand God. So we're going to spend 13 weeks looking at the attributes of God. And in the text of the material that you have tonight, he suggests that an understanding of God is what informs our worship, our morality, and our service. Agree? Can you think of other areas of your life that it impacts?
Your relationship with family.
Okay, that's a good point. It will inform patience. Anything else? What about your marriage? You know, as I was thinking about this, I was thinking about the apostles' discussion in Ephesians. He says, husbands, love your wives, even as Christ loved the church and gave himself for it, that he might sanctify it, cleanse it with the washing of water by the word. If you want to know how to love your wife, look at the way that Christ loved the church. And if you have the kind of, if you distort that picture, you'll distort the way you love your wife. If you distort that picture, you'll distort the idea of patience. If we focus only on the wrath of God, we lose sight of patience. And if we focus only on patience, we can lose sight of the fact that there is judgment coming. Any other part of your life that you think, does understanding God impact the way that you are on the job?
Yes.
Okay, you're saying, yeah, why?
It affects how you are with your fellow workers.
Okay.
If it's a service job, it affects how you are with the community. Anyone that you come in contact with on the job, if you know God, then that's just part of your personality, I guess, is a way
Okay. Carol.
Could get you fired because the boss wants you to do something that isn't right, and God says not to do it, and you're going to tell him you're not going to do it, and it's like, goodbye.
Yeah. I have been there. Somebody wanted me to fudge some numbers when I was doing a statistical analysis, and I said no. It didn't get me fired, but we just decided to disagree. I didn't write that report. Anything else? Makes you a person, if you understand God, you work for your employer as if you were working for God. You know, that's what James says. Yeah.
It affects the way you drive in a car. You're no longer the king in that car.
That's true. And I admit that there have been times that I wanted to tell Jesus, you go sit over there for just a minute. I need to have a discussion with this guy, and you're probably not going to approve of the discussion that I want to have with him. So, yeah. Yeah, Bill.
I got to bring up David again. Of all the men in the Bible, he is the most imperfect one that we have so many examples of. Yet God knew everything about him and still loved him. He knows every thought we have. We can't go hide somewhere.
No, that's
true. And yet, if we sincerely love him and want to be better, he is going to be by our side, holding our hand.
Yeah, can you think about an example of service where a biblical character changed his approach to service because of God?
Paul.
Okay. How so?
Well, he was Saul, and that was not a good thing. And he recognized that after seeing on the road to Damascus, he changed.
Good point. Yeah.
Would Zacharias be an example? Because he was thinking one direction, and when God, the angel of God, told him another thing, he needed time to be able to say his name is John.
Okay. Bill?
There was a servant to the king of Assyria or the king of Babylon that he had his eyes open, and he said, I will not bow to any other god but Jehovah the rest of my life. And please forgive me when I bow next to my master.
I'm trying to remember who that was. Anybody remember who that was?
Yes, I believe that was the gentleman that was cured of leprosy in the River Jordan. He went and did it seven times.
Naaman?
That's him.
Yeah, I think it might have been Naaman's servant. Not Naaman himself. Yeah.
I believe it was Naaman himself.
Oh, it may have been. You know, I just hadn't. My memory is failing me right now as I try to remember that. Yeah. Ted?
I think Moses is a good example of somebody who changed their path because of God. Moses would have never chosen for himself to lead his people. That was absolutely the furthest from him. He argued with God and pleaded with God not to send him to be a leader, because that was not in his nature. But because of God, he changed his way.
Okay. I was thinking about Paul Well, I'll save that until we get to the next question. Yeah, Mandy, you had your hand up.
No.
Okay. Other thoughts? Anybody at home have a thought about somebody who made a dramatic change in their life, in their service to God, when they understood more about God? Yeah, Bill?
Nebuchadnezzar.
Okay. Good answer. Nebuchadnezzar went from thinking, I am the authority, to when Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego were in that furnace and they were not touched by the flame, he began to worship God. Now, whether he went all the way to becoming a worshiper of God or whether he just added Jehovah to his pantheon of gods, there might be some question about that. But
I was thinking of where he was driven from man and lived like an animal.
Okay, that's
he
true.
He came back and said, God is the great God. He is the only living God, I believe.
Okay. Other thoughts about people who has this happened in your own life? When you come to understand more about God, it changes the way that you live your life.
Yeah, there's a little voice that says, don't do that or do this. Get up off your rear and go help that person.
True. Jane is shaking her head, yes.
I'm sorry, Lee?
Jane is shaking her head, yes.
Oh, okay. Comment, Jane, or just agreement? Yeah. It has certainly taught me patience. Somebody mentioned patience before. I think it was Sharon, but it has certainly taught me patience because I am not by nature a patient person. Mm. I have to have God's influence to do that. I'm an impatient person. Yeah, Mandy?
I think it's changed my approach to understanding where my students are coming from. Understanding that when I'm teaching sound judgments in business practice, there are students who have grown up with the idea of sound judgments and judging rightly. And they have grown up with that concept. They understand that. When I put it to those students, they say, well, yeah, you have sound judgment and you judge rightly. They use those terms. And I say, I know where your background is. But then there are other students in that same environment who have never thought about that concept. And so we talk about ethics and we compare ethics to morality. And realizing that our personal morals either match or don't match with ethical practices within industries. And so understanding where my students are coming from and not prejudging their knowledge base. And that comes from that partially patience, but partially understanding that God expects us to be educators, and he expects us to be teachers, and expects us to be an example in that.
Good point, and well said. The most eye-opening experience I ever had was working in a prison. A lot of inmates don't think about God the same way that I think about God. That most of them think about God, but their perception is that God is the punisher. And they are more than willing to be the punisher. Okay? Now, as twisted as that sounds, they feel like they're doing God's work when they beat somebody to a pulp, or when they abuse women. And I spent a lot of time around male sex offenders. That's just, I think Mandy's point is well taken. A lot of people grow up with a really distorted picture of God, or no picture of God.
Or a skewed sense of morality.
Okay.
They base their own morals on the world and what they see happening around them. Something evil is happening, I'm going to take care of that. Never mind the morality that comes from God.
Okay. Okay. Yeah, Carol.
In many Indian cultures, stealing was forbidden in their own tribe, but they could go out and steal against another tribe. So it's, you know, different standards for different morals, different standards for the way a family is raised, you know, and you have to take all of that in understanding from where that person comes from.
Yeah, we do that too. I mean, in our country, I would never steal from an individual, but it's okay to steal from a store.
Yeah. They've got insurance.
They've got insurance. And you will hear people defend stealing from a store as nonviolent and as a reasonable course for you to pursue. That just, it amazes me that we do that, but we do it.
Well, that means the most crime is nonviolent, so it's okay. There are very few really violent crimes.
Oh, well, depends on how you define violence, you know. But yeah, people will say it's okay. It's okay for me to take your car. If you didn't want, and trust me, I've had this conversation with people who are incarcerated. If I want your car, I'll come and get it. And if you don't stop me from taking it, that means it's okay for me to have it.
The world owes me a living.
Well, yeah.
And I will do what I want to do.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. So let's think about the last point that he makes is, he says it's possible for us to remake God into our image. What do you think? He quotes Psalms 50. That's Psalms 50. I should have worn my more powerful glasses, but then I look like I have Coke bottle bottoms. We make God in our image. You know, it's possible for us to make God in the image of 20th century America. And we think of, you know, you've probably seen the Black Jesus, for want of a better term, and the Black Lives Matter group did a lot to kind of popularize that. You ever think about it? Jesus probably didn't look like a 20th century white European. He probably looked very Jewish, kind of swarthy.
Isaiah tells us that he wasn't an attractive, handsome person.
Yeah. But we remake God in our image.
We do. But that, I think a lot of that has to do with not, you conjure up an image of God and what he might look like in your own mind, because nobody's ever seen him. And so how can he be described? So you have to look at it in human terms. I mean, you have to picture God, somehow. And the only way you can really do that is in human terms.
That's true. Carol?
It's not the visual picture of God. It's how you picture what and who God is, what he will put up with, what he won't put up, and they make God in their own image because they have made excuses for things that they want to do. Like maybe somebody who says, well, I'm going to do this or that, and I know it's a sin, but I'm going to have my sins forgiven before I do that. So, I mean, they make it in their own image in what they want. They go to the church of their choice. They have the God of their choice, and he's loving. He would never do anything like that. He wouldn't. Everybody's going to go to heaven because the God I know wouldn't send anybody to hell.
Okay. Either Ted or Mandy had your hand up. I forgot.
I was just going to say it's kind of funny when we think about our, even in our culture, the ideals of what Pharisees and Sadducees look like. We put them in their garb and in their culture, but then we have our version of Jesus popping up. Because even in some of the children's books that you'll see Pharisees portrayed in Jewish garb and looking Jewish with long beards and those kind of things. But then you'll see Jesus that looks like he came right out of America.
It's a very ethnocentric viewpoint.
Yeah, he came out of central casting at Disney.
Yeah.
You're right. And we do it in terms of a visual, but I think it's even worse when we do it in terms of assigning our picture of justice to God. And we do that, that wouldn't be just. Like Ted was talking this morning in our class about his picture of justice and how it just didn't seem right to him that the person who worked through the heat of the day got the same wage as the person who came in the last hour. That just didn't seem just. And you assign your value of justice to God. And we can't do that. If we do that, we'll have a distorted picture of God. Yeah, Mandy, you have your hand up.
I was just thinking about the ethnocentricity, but also I think the idea that we usurp God's power. When we give him, we say that we are giving our will to God, but when that doesn't match what our will is, when his answer, when his response isn't what our will would have had it to be, how can you do that to me, God? How can you possibly do that to me? We're usurping his authority and his power in our lives by saying, you didn't do what I wanted, now I got.
Yeah. Yeah, Carol?
Well, we're supposed to pray for everybody, and we're supposed to forgive. And it's very hard to do both of them because you're praying for people that, what do you pray for? I mean, you're praying that God will be able to intervene, but also it's just forgiving. You can forgive somebody as an enemy, and that may be all the further you're ever able to forgive them than somebody who killed your child in a car accident or something. You may only be able to give them food and water if they need it and treat them with respect. You may not ever be able to get further than that, but God says you have to be able to forgive that person, and that's where it starts.
Anybody remember the case where Dylan Roof, I think was his name, went berserk at a prayer meeting and killed 8 people? When he went to trial, that congregation of people, and I believe it was an AME Baptist group where he did that, but that group of people came to the trial, and to a man, they said, "We forgive him."
Yeah.
And that was a powerful statement. I'm not sure I could do that, to be perfectly honest. But I think Carol makes a good point. I have to learn how to do it. And I have to learn to be like God instead of making God like me. There are some things, you know, that are pretty unforgivable in my book. You mess with my wife, my kids, I can't forgive that. You cut off my arm, I can forgive you for doing that. But you mess with my wife and kids, I have a much harder time doing that. And I'll even quote scripture and tell you that a man has to care for his wife. It's my effort to make God over in my image instead of letting myself be made into his image. Yeah, Carol?
But I think you're going a step further, and that is to the full thing of what Jesus will do if you admit your sin. That's forgive and forget. There are some things you can never forget, but God gives you a way to forgive, even if it's only at that lowest thing. You have to forgive, and you have to pray for them. And you may only pray that they never do something like this again. And that's a prayer for them. But you have to learn how to do that, because Jesus says, if you don't forgive, I'm not going to forgive.
That's true. That's true. It's hard to be like God.
Very.
It's a lot easier to make God into our image. It's hard to be like God. But that's where we have to be. So, we'll be spending some time talking about God. And next week, we'll talk about how God is transcendent. There is a sense in which we could never be like God. So think about that as you study for next week. And we'll talk a little bit about the transcendent nature of God and what that means. Transcendent is not a word that ever appears in the anywhere in the Bible that I'm aware of, but the concept, I think, is still there. So give that some thought, and we'll take up with that discussion next week.